Back in historic town hall in New York for a continuation of America's Town Meeting of the Air. Our moderator, Mr. George B. Denny Jr., will carry on. Mr. Denny.
Madam Secretary and Mr. Sikorsky, town hall is filled to capacity tonight, and I know that many of you here are eager to ask the Secretary and Mr. Sikorsky some questions. But before we get started, we've had several questions from the radio audience, and I'm going to ask just one of them because that's about all we have time for. Madam Secretary, here's a question from Mr. Alex W. Johnson in New York City. Are not the payroll taxes levied against industry going to vitally affect the future potential writing of life insurance?
I don't know that I altogether understand the purport of Mr. Johnson's question, but my impression would be that it would, the contrary would be true. There are all too few people who have themselves taken advantage of the private purchase of annuities through the straight insurance companies. It would appear to me and to all of us who have examined these proposals that the granting of regular annuities to those who are covered by the official old age insurance system would encourage those who are not covered, those in the higher income groups, to make provision for themselves by annuity. As for the purchase of straight life insurance, I can't see that it would have any effect one way or the other.
Now then, there are a number of written questions here, but let's have some of those verbal questions. If you will rise, state your name, the person to whom your question is directed, and limit your question to 25 words. Question, please. Yes,
Mr.
R. Martin to Mr. Sikorsky. Yes?
Which would you consider more important than practice? Individual initiative and liberty, or the salvage of 10 million human beings in an effort to raise the standard of living?
Mr. Sikorsky. We
have in this country over a period of 6 years facing the greatest crisis perhaps that ever faced any country in the world through two political administrations, taken care of 10 million unemployed and possibly between 30 and 40 million people without losing our personal liberties and without destroying our structure of government.
No question.
Madam Secretary Perkins.
Mr. Loder to Madam Secretary Perkins.
Should not we merge all life insurance companies into a national system of living insurance, thereby guaranteeing life insurance savings of the people as bank deposits have been guaranteed?
Madam Secretary, should we merge all of our insurance into one great life insurance company, thereby ensuring security for all?
It occurred to me that that's a debate for another evening. It has nothing whatever to do with this subject.
Right.
Mr. Chico to Madam Secretary.
Mr. Chico to Madam Secretary.
The life insurance statistic shows that the average man dies at the age of 60, while you would give him a pension at the age of 65.
Pensions are not for the average man, but for those who live until 65 and over and become a burden upon themselves, the community, their children, and other young people if they have no provision made for them. Those who die under 60 are, of course, not... May I say this, that under the bill, you should know this. The contributions made by a person who dies before he becomes 65 years of age, they go to his dependents, so that his dependents get the benefit of the savings he may have contributed to the system. Also, if after he begins to receive benefits, he dies before he has received as much as he has paid in, that balance also goes to his dependents.
Okay. Black to Mr. Sikorsky. Black to Mr. Sikorsky. Mr. Sikorsky is afraid of losing his liberties if the millions of people of this country obtain Social Security.
Great Britain has had social legislation.
All right.
Will Mr. Sikorsky not admit that in Germany and Italy, the loss of liberties is due not to social security, but to the lack of it?
Mr. Sikorsky, in Germany, they had one of the most scientifically worked out plans for social security that the world has ever seen. And they've had a long experience with it since the days of Bismarck. I think that you misstated what I said entirely, and I can't let you get by with that. I never said that I am afraid that if millions have social security, that we shall lose our liberties. I want millions to have social security, but I don't want to lose our liberties by having a concentration of federal power while we are finding for these millions a way to social security.
Question from the balcony. What's the name? Mr. Klosgood?
Mr. Sikorsky claims that the salvation of our people depends upon democracy.
Question?
Does Mr. Sikorsky honestly believe in democracy?
No, that's a personal question. The man has given a 15-minute speech on that subject. Question?
Mr. Frank Bertrand to Mr. Sikorsky.
Mr. Bertrand to Mr. Sikorsky.
Are we compelled to accept the pessimistic conclusion that because the present American plan, as well as some of the European experiments, are impossible, that ends the question? Is there no other ideal that we can find?
Mr. Sikorsky.
I'm very glad you asked that question, because we have our ideal, and we have it with us all the time. Where we fall down is that we're impatient. We're in a hurry. We don't realize what a tremendous advance not only we as a race, but each one of us as human beings has actually made decade by decade as we moved along from the pre-capitalist, the poverty-stricken life that we knew wherever we started, to the high standard of living which we now have here in the world, even in times of depression everywhere, and after a great war. We're too impatient now that we have begun to see ways of achieving a high standard of living and a security to put our methods into effect before we have thought them out, before we have worked them out, before we have discovered how to do them without at the same time destroying what we have already achieved. Even Lenin saw the wisdom occasionally of stepping back to go forward, and we don't have to step back as far as he did.
I'm going to read one of these questions that were handed in. A great many of them were handed in here. Ms. Perkins, in enforcing a system of compulsory employer-employee old age insurance on a huge, complicated network of government supervisory agencies must be set up, agencies similar to those of the NRA, which broke down under their own weight. How will this difficulty be met in the administration of Old Age Insurance Act? Helen Retcher.
I think it will not be anything like so necessary as it is assumed in this question to have a network of complicated government agencies. It is the method of administering insurance companies on a national basis or an international basis is fairly well known, and the technique is very well worked out. You have but to go into one of the large insurance companies and look at their method of handling their records and handling their administration to realize that although it is complicated to those who don't understand it, it is simple to those who know how to work it, and that those who either pay their premiums and receive their benefits are hardly aware of the operation of the system of the life insurance company. So it will be for those who pay their premiums in old age insurance and receive the benefits when they are due. Many of us own or have bought already years ago annuities on our part payment plan, and we are not aware of the complicated movements that are made by the insurance company back of the scene. We do know that we pay when we receive a bill, we get our benefits when they are due, and it's as simple as that. The administration will be on an extremely simple basis, the only participation of the worker being his keeping of his number, keeping in his own mind and in his papers a record of his number on the file, so that he can be identified at age 65 as the same individual, whether he changes his name or dyes his hair or what he does, so that he can be identified as the individual who made the original contribution, just as you keep your insurance policy as a record that you have actually made the payment. I don't think that there will be anything like a confused or complicated system, and one should not look forward to that. Certainly the present plan are being worked out with the advice of competent people who have had long and vast experience in large insurance practice.
Madam Secretary, here's one more question from Jim Turner, Chicago, Illinois. If the Old Age Pension Act becomes a law, what will be the exemption from a financial point? For instance, two old people having a small piece of property worth about $5,000, but which couldn't be given away now, are depending on a single daughter who is sacrificing her life to look after this old couple. These people have denied themselves many things in the way of pleasures and even necessary things in order to have this property. What will be their exemption under this old age pension law?
I think we should remember, and this also ought to have been said in answer to someone who asked about the 60 and 65 problem. We ought to remember that people who are now aged and indigent are covered by the Pension Act and not by the Insurance Act, and that the Insurance Act, of course, will affect only people who are now young, or as the insurance companies call it, half old. That the Pension Act will apply to persons who are beyond the half-old age and will be eligible for pensions beyond any contributions they can have made. And that, of course, is the is what will be set up as security for those who are too old at the present time to build up by contributions into an insurance fund the proper offset to any payments that may be made to them. To an old couple who are depending upon a pension to see them through because they are aged and needy, they will recover under their state act, whatever it happens to be. Most states have an exemption which permits a person to own free and clear property up to the value of $3,000 and still be eligible for a pension. Between those who administer, that is, own real property of some sort or other up to the value of $3,000. Those who administer the act in this particular state will have to determine with this particular old couple whether or not their piece of property is worth $3,000 or $5,000 or whatever the exemption of that state is. If it is as described in the question, that it has no value, they will, of course, be permitted to, no sale value, permitted to keep it and be eligible for a pension.